This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
No Burgess. No Morsey. No Luongo. No Hurst. No problem. 3 points for Ipswich from behind. In spite of huge pressure from Southampton, Ipswich stay in second, and it's January the bloody 14th. Did I mention we were in League One last season? Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Craig, I've got we're very spoiled. I've got lots of favourite victories the last sort of year or so. That was excellent last night, wasn't it? Under the circumstances, and considering you pushed late in the 5:30 kickoff, all the pressure's on, everybody's watching, you go behind. What great performance!
Yeah. Good evening, Ben. Good evening, everybody. yeah, it was, and it's also just yet again another type of win that we've managed to do, pull out the bag. And I went to see my dad earlier today, and he was watching on the telly. He used to go years and years ago, but he watched on the telly, and he said himself, God, your manager enjoyed that one at the end, didn't he? And you saw, didn't you, on the TV highlights after the match, they went straight to McKenna and he was screaming, and you don't often see him that animated. And I just think, as you say, Ben, just the circumstances, as you alluded to in your intro, the team that's been foisted upon him, you know, through injuries and suspensions, just to get that across the line, I think was probably one of the most enjoyable victories so far this season, certainly from the coaching and the management's perspective, I would have thought.
Big win, Joe. Were you giving it the fist pump like McKenna was at the end?
Yeah, it was, especially because we were like five without a win going into it in the league. So, and knowing that we've got Leicester coming up next, and then It could easily have gone to seven games without a win, couldn't it? And then the wheels have come off. Southampton are ahead of us. We're going from there. So it felt a huge win when you looked at the games earlier. And obviously Leeds won, Southampton won. Both won very, very comfortably. And we dropped out the top two for the first time in forever. And yeah, just to go out there and get the win with all the players missing, as you mentioned in the intro, was just a massive win. Really, really good night in the stadium, wasn't it? Portman Road under lights and really get everyone's buzzing, weren't they?
Tremendous stuff. Buzzing we are, and buzzing to have you lot live here in the chat. If you're watching on YouTube, do make yourself known, get involved. We'll go full Q&A after we've done this segment and the championship review as well. Make sure you hit the thumbs up button as well. Help us out. If you're watching after the fact, we do appreciate you guys too. Equally, make sure you get involved over on our Twitter and by leaving a 5-star review. Got to say, Craig, when the teams came in, I mean, we knew it was going to be a kind of 1B team, just given what we had on offer. We know Kieran McKenna is so, so high on continuity. And if he can leave players in that he's had in the team for a long period of time, he will. But particularly when it became known that Massimo Luongo wasn't going to be playing, it did smell a bit troublesome. Let me read through the team, Craig, and you can tell me your sort of response to this. Hladke in goal, Clark, Wolfenden, Edmondson, and Leif Davis. And it is interesting midfield of Lewis Travis, and Jack Taylor. So really the reserve midfield, essentially, use whatever word you're comfortable with. Not the reserve three off the front, Craig. Burns, Chaplin, who was the captain, and Broadhead. But we thought it would be Caden Jackson up top. Your thoughts on the 11, Craig?
Well, as you say, you know, we're probably not blessed with a massive squad and therefore a huge selection. But it's just nice to see Davis back, wasn't it? Having not been around for a few weeks, and for him to get through the game as well. I did think towards the second half when Cameron Humphreys was warming up, whether he may have come on towards the end. Edmondson has been playing fantastically since he's come in for Burgess. No issues with that. But yeah, as you say, it's the previously unknown absence of Luongo. I think we probably thought that Travis would have played alongside Luongo should Luongo have been fit. But yeah, a double whammy to go without your first choice centre midfield. And then yeah, we said about Ladapo and talked about dear old Freddie for a few weeks now. He now does seem to be a long, long way down that pecking order when it comes to first choice strikers and indeed first, second, third choice substitutes now.
We'll
so
get into that with a subs, Craig, won't we? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, Jackson played well. He did exactly what you can expect of him. You know, we've spoken about on here before that these guys have got ceilings, and the team may well be outperforming their relative ceilings, but you can't knock these guys for their effort. And, you know, they certainly do continue to give their all. And I say Jackson was pretty much exemplified that yesterday.
What's your take on that 11, Joe? It wasn't really much else he could do, was there?
No, it's interesting with the central midfield pairing, isn't it? Because it does seem like Luongo and Taylor are the left-sided central midfielder, and now Morsey, and previously Ball and Evans, and now Travis are the right-sided central midfielder, and they are quite different roles, how they play. So it's interesting that he sort of stepped straight into that. Yeah, but the rest of it was as you expected, and I think Caden Jackson justified his selection well, and there's been a lot of chat about it in the Telegram today with regards to just how much work he gets through and the pressing intensity he gives you, and without that we have nothing to build from. And I think when you look at the Sunderland side, on the flip side of it there, when you've got sort of Jude Bellingham and Alex Pritchard as almost like
Joe
pair of, oh yeah, sorry, Joe and Alex Pritchard as a pair.
Wouldn't
of,
have been 2-1 if it was Jude.
As sort of like a pair of sort of attacking midfielders rather than strikers. Neither of them sort of could really occupy a centre half. And it seems like Beale's trying to play this sort of vertical football, but they don't have the players at the top of the pitch stretching for them. There was a couple of times when Bellingham did make the run in behind and had a nice ball over the top there, but they seem more desperate for a strike than we do even.
Yeah, Footmob, presumably based on GPS data, has called that a 4-4-F-2. It absolutely wasn't, was it? Patterson in goal for Sunderland, who I like and is going to have a good battle with our right back, strangely, in this game. Hume and Alesse, the fullbacks. Ballard, who, yeah, good player. And Onine, the centre halves. Neil and Ekwa, who looks like he could be a really good player if he puts it all together in central midfield. And I made it Bellingham up top with Pritchard in the 10, Barr off the right and Clark off the left. Joe, obviously, as I mentioned, Patterson, Ballard through the team, Ekwa with the potential. Clark, clearly the danger man. But they've got some good players, Sunderland, finished in sixth last season.
Yeah, and a lot of the players that were part of that team that finished in sixth are still the spine of the team now, aren't they? When you sort of look for that centre-back pairing and the central midfield pairing, they've got some really good players and some players that are probably worth quite a lot of money. I think if you took out Jack Clark, Dan Neal and Ekwa in the middle, you could probably be looking for about 50 million quid's worth of transfer fees just across those three players there, wouldn't you? So there's some serious talent there, but they just, I don't know, they just don't seem to quite get going, do they? With they sort of win a couple of games, lose a couple here, there, and I think just the lack of a strike and something that Tony Mowbray spoke a lot about earlier in the season about not having strikers ready is just hurting them all season.
Do you want to take us up to the first goal, Craig? There was a reasonably even, wasn't there? It was a mistake from Harry Clark in our corner that Bellingham couldn't finish the shot off. Jackson, I don't know. You never really can tell. Was he on his heels for the chance that Burns put across the box? We get famously caught up the pitch again with Leif Davis playing on the left wing, and poor old Harry Clark gets a bit exposed by Jack Clark, and there's that chance there. And then we're up to the goal, Craig.
Yeah, well, as you say, Burns had a couple of opportunities to get crosses, which he did. He'd picked out...
He played well, almost, Craig.
Yeah, he did. First half especially, he had Elise on toast down right in front of where we are on top of the tunnel there. We look right along that goal line at the Churchman's end. And you say about the cross that he put in for Jackson. Jackson, to be fair to him, he made the right run. He went to the front post, then checked and went to the back post. But unfortunately, the pace on the cross was just a bit too much for him. And then he pulled another one back for Taylor, and Taylor side-footed it rather than get a proper strike at it. That famous pull back to the around the penalty spot to get the shot away. But yeah, he was running Elise as well all the time, every time he got the ball. And as Joe said about Bellingham and running from D, I think we're just a little... I suppose it's quite difficult to defend against, isn't it, when you haven't got anybody physically up against you to defend against from a central defender's perspective. You're always waiting for the guy to be running towards you with the ball or off the ball. And they were doing that a few times. Bellingham was breaking through from his, what do you call it, a false nine or a number 10 position, running through on the goal. But yeah, so their goal, it ended up at Barr's feet on the right-hand side, and he got a bit of a dribble on, got into the box where we then couldn't really touch him because, say, he's a decent dribbler. The ball was pretty much stuck to his feet. Chaplin was there, Clark was there, but they couldn't commit to the tackle. So he worked his way into the box, slid it across to Clark, who's on the edge of the D. He takes a touch and then thwacks it past Clacky, basically. They were quite dismissive of Clacky. I watched Sky when I got back in about his positioning and second guessing of the shots, which he did for a previous Clark shot, which hit his legs and sort of ballooned up. He was sort of preempting where Clark was going to hit it. And he did here as well, didn't he? He took a step to his left.
He's expecting the one shaped into the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah, killed into the corner. Yeah, that's right. But that just kills his momentum to be able to get back to the right. And it's past him before he can even blink, isn't it? He does absolutely thwack it, as I say. And it's they were arguing the toss about whether he may have got to it or may not have got to it. Your mate Joby didn't seem to think that he would have got to it, even if he had ready for it. No, it's a fantastic finish. And yeah, he was pretty much their only real outlet, Joe, wasn't he? Clark on the left, you know, he was going forward. Certainly, he was. As soon as they got it out to him, they looked different than they did all over across the rest of the pitch, I thought.
Yeah, do you want to come in on that, Joe?
Yeah, he was their main man, wasn't he? It was the whole game went through him in an attacking sense for them. The only other attacks they had were sort of the lofted balls where Job had made the run sort of through and picked up a couple of loads, and they led to some chances. But no, it was very much a case of just trying to get the ball to Clark and having him do something. But when you look at his numbers this season, what is it now, 13 goals and 5 or 6 assists, that is how they've played all season, isn't it? And he's stepped up with it, and he's getting a lot of, sounds like West Ham are very interested in him at the moment. So we'll see if they're able to get him out of there in this month or whether Sunderland can hold firm.
It's just one of those goals, Joe, where because it's a recycle from a set play, you're in an abnormal position than you would be otherwise. And it's almost a case
like... Well, Harry Clark's over at left back, isn't he? And
yeah, but it's almost a case that Clark and Broadhead and Chaplin all wouldn't normally be there, and the 1v1 defending turned into a bit of a cluster, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess, and you just need to get the ball away in those situations, don't you? And then give yourself a chance to reset, and we just didn't. And that sort of, I can't remember, was it Barr who made the run sort of across the pitch, and sort of Clark lets him go. Then Chaplin, he just sort of brushes Chaplin off, doesn't he? And
he's in the box, isn't he? Then you don't want to dangle
Chaplin
a leg.
I'm not touching him, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a great strike. Like I say, it was difficult for mine to see what happened because Ladke, you just didn't see him there. And he's obviously, like I say, he's unsighted. He's trying to sort of second guess maybe what was happening there. But no, it's just a great goal from a top player at this level, isn't it?
Yeah. So 1-0 behind, but this team goes behind quite a lot and still gets some results, Joe. Get back into it reasonably quickly, although Clark got slid in, and there's a good save from Patterson. Oh, excuse me. That's my second half note. Sorry.
No, that was happened in the first as well.
Yeah. Burns to Clark. Exactly. Yeah. And then we get to the goal, Joe. Large slice of luck, but then a really good finish. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good from Lewis Travis in there, isn't it? Because he's come into the game and obviously it's his first time in the system. And I thought he that handled himself well, did really well, covered the pitch well, more defensively. But what he wasn't giving us, which you probably wouldn't expect him to on a debut, is that out ball that Sam Morsy gives, where the keeper or the centre-backs can play the ball vertically straight into him, knowing that he can take the ball under pressure, turn and get us up the pitch, where he was more sort of a case of almost getting the ball and playing it safe. He's very, very secure on the ball and that. And he was doing well, but you were missing something slightly from what Morsy had, but the goal comes from him playing one of those vertical balls. He aims at Chaplin. You get a slice of luck as it sort of hits Chaplin and hits a Sunderland defender and it just drops. But Caden Jackson is really sharp and it isn't always a case for him, but he finishes it with real conviction, doesn't he? It's like a lot of times he's sort of almost just not half-hearted with his shots, but doesn't quite, you don't feel like he seems to have the confidence to finish them properly. But yeah, he got in there and it's just a cracking finish and fully deserved for his performance, sort of not just last night, but overall.
Needed that goal before half-time, didn't we, Craig, as well?
Yeah, definitely. Because as you say, Clark had been fed in by Burns, but our press was very good in the first half. Even further up the pitch, it was good. We were enforcing a lot of errors out of Sunderland, who were trying to play the way that Mick Beale was trying to get them to play. And I think Jackson does react fantastically. You know, he's on it straight, like a proper season strike, you know, anticipation and then putting away with no fuss at all. I suppose he's slightly helped in that the way it falls to him, it's only that, it's literally that finish is the finish he's got to play, isn't it? It's the obvious finish, and he's whipped it into the side netting as well. So yeah, it's a great finish.
Yeah, great finish. And if he doesn't score in that game, I mean, it's a no-win situation. If he doesn't score in that game and, you know, maybe we don't get a positive result, it's all going to be, oh, we're missing Hurst. So it is what it is. We've got to, we'll talk about Jackson and maybe Travis at the end, but we've got to try and avoid the outcome bias type analysis of a striker who've scored and a game that's won and try and look at the contribution. I think that's the important thing and what it does for the team. Craig, we'll stay with you. So, yeah, we can talk about that Clark shot. He does excellently to get in, unfortunately. Yeah, he's a right back and maybe the cross would have been better. Mr. Ayuchiche, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, comes on for a horrific sub cameo. horrible mistake by, I'll blame who you like here. Clankley tries to play it out, gets deflected and... that should have been 2-1 Sunderland, shouldn't it, Craig?
Yeah, it should have been. But then, as Joe was saying just now about the absence of Morsy, you don't know how much the absence of Morsy affects Clagkey, affects Wolfenden with their hesitancy about passing out. That Wolfenden got caught on the ball a little bit later on. Clagkey dillies and dallies on this one, and Don Goodman was having a go at him on the commentary, saying, "Oh, he's taking too long on the ball." Well, Elsie hasn't watched us a lot this season to make comments like that. But I just think the usual suspects weren't ahead of them to be able to pass into. But no, you're right about Ayuchiche, poor old guy, got hung out to dry, I think, by Mick Beale in the post-match interview as well.
Not like, surprised.
Two or three times, didn't he? He had to go in for two misses and the free kick. Poor sod. But no, he should have at least hit the target, if nothing else.
That was one of those where when Kladke had the ball, it doesn't happen very often, but every now and again you see it where Wolfie was telling me he didn't want it. He was pointing to sort of not to me. He was basically saying he didn't want the ball and put it elsewhere, and he tried to fit it through to him and didn't make it. But there's not many times our players tell their passer that they don't want it, but that was one of them, and you can see why.
And it's so difficult to criticise Kladke, but in that situation, if the pass isn't on, he tried to... whether he held on to it too long, Craig, and Don Goodman's word is up for debate, but it was the wrong pass at that point, and they got a foot on it, didn't they? And then Joe, it's going to get worse for Mr. Ayuchiche, and we have to be honest as football fans here. If that was the other way around, we would all be saying that's a hell of a soft free kick as he goes into the back of Davis. But we also always say on this podcast, when we get one against us, you've got to defend the free kick. And isn't it great, as Kieran McKenna said, Joe, that sometimes these fine margins games, they are decided by set plays. And isn't it great to win with one? Davis to Chapman.
Yeah, and I personally didn't think it was a soft free kick. I just thought it was a silly... No, I just thought it was a really silly challenge there.
Oh, two things can be true. It was a silly challenge and a soft free kick.
But the ref always gives those when you just go and... If someone stands in front of you and you just bundle into them, it's just... It was totally needless, but it's an obvious free kick. And then Davis steps up and I think you can see on the sort of Town in Five today, Davis is sort of basically pointing to Chapman, telling him that the one down on the ground isn't on. So they obviously have some communication issue, working out what they're going to do there, and some great blocking from George Edmondson. I think a couple of weeks back after the Leeds game, we spoke about how, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Stroik had sort of basically bundled our defence, bundled Burgess away from the ball for their goal, and just said it's something that we're very good at. It's not something we're complaining about. It's something we're very good at. And this was something Edmondson did where it was almost like sort of like American football. He was one of your sort of offensive linemen going up there and just making a block there. And Chapman, the smallest guy on the pitch, he doesn't even need to leave the ground either. He's got his feet planted on the ground, and it's a brilliant delivery, brilliant header. Keeper, no chance with it. And it's one of those ones that you could see it was in from the moment it left his head.
Craig, you've got the luxury when you're one of the shorter players that you can kind of stand still in those areas. And as we've heard the Linekers and Ian Wrights and Shearers say, if you've got that luxury, sometimes the best movement you can do from a set play is to stand still, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Especially when the delivery's that quality and of that pace as well, because he didn't need to do anything with it. He just reconnects with the ball and all the pace is on the ball, and then all the pace is in the header, isn't it? As Joe said, that Edmondson bull in a china shop, just running and bundling everyone who's in his path out of the way on the edge of the six-yard box, just creates that space. And he's in absolutely acres of space. And you say about the free kick being, if it had it been a given against us, we'd be moaning about it being a soft one. Can you imagine if we'd conceded a header to a guy who's 5'6" tall
after conceding that free kick
on his own 8 yards out in the middle of the goal? Yeah,
tremendous stuff. How did Luke Wolfenden not score a couple of minutes later, Craig?
Yeah, poor old guy. It's right in the very far opposite corner to where I sit. But again, it's another Davis free kick. It's Chapman, I think, may have got a chest on it to sort of deflect it towards goal. That's right. And Wolfenden's charging in at the back post. And yeah, should have put things to bed there. Unfortunately, he didn't. But by this time, we'd had Hutchison and Sarmiento had come on, and they both made a big impact.
Good point.
Both got the ball, getting the ball to feet and just running at people, especially Hutchison. They were really getting the ball out to him. He'd come on for Burns by this point, and they were just getting the ball out to him time and time again. He was running and running and running at them. It'd be interesting to see how we play those guys in the forthcoming fixtures coming up, whether they're due a start or whether we use them specifically for these reasons, are coming on in the last half an hour when legs are tired. It's the last thing you want someone dancing towards you with the ball at their feet, I'd have thought.
That's a great point, Joe, isn't it? Didn't it feel like you've got a tight game, you've got two dribbly Premier League loney wingers? That did feel, our bench would be able to make a difference now with two of them to bring in, right?
Yeah, and it has felt over the last sort of maybe three or four games that when we've had subs coming on, they haven't really been in a position to really change the game. It's almost just been, you're just having to take off a player because they're struggling with fitness and bringing on somebody who's probably a little bit weaker than they are, rather than improving you or changing options up. It was just, I know our squad had been stretched over the last few weeks, and it felt yesterday, even though that there was the players missing, as we noted, it felt like all the subs were able to come on and make a bit of a difference in the game.
Joe, fortunately, it didn't make a difference. And please, let's not get juvenile, tribal, outraged about refereeing, because I quite like referee Alisson. I've done a few of his games on a watch-along. But should have had a penalty at 2-1, shouldn't we?
It's a ludicrous challenge.
It's a mental decision.
I have seen one angle where it looks like he gets a little bit of the ball, but I don't think you tackle like that whether you get a bit of the ball or not. It's one of those, it's almost like the sort of 90s refereeing where, he's got the ball, so he's allowed to just totally clean him out. But no, that was just a ludicrous challenge from, was it O'Neill, was it?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Who's a dirty player always, and it's just
sorry to interrupt. I thought
challenge.
of I thought of, I played your little sentence in my head of try and rationalise why the ref has made that decision. The only thing I could come up with is that he let it go on to, I think, Chaplin and was hoping he'd stick it in the net. And then he just panicked afterwards and didn't pull it back. Joe, that was my only rationalisation.
Yeah, it must be that. But it's happened twice against Sunderland now, hasn't it? Because in the first game at the Stadium of Light, Chaplin hits the bar and the ball comes down and George Hurst gets it and somebody totally wipes him out. It's almost like they just panic and fly into challenges, but got away with both of them. But no, that's a silly, silly challenge. And yeah, it, it didn't match in the end, but yeah, that would have been frustrating.
But it doesn't matter, Craig, and just a really good performance. They see out the stoppage time and get the win. What were your sort of reflections on the final whistle?
Well, as we said at the beginning, that's just a very decent result and a decent performance under all the circumstances we've spoken about. It was a pretty even first half, to be fair. Sunderland probably had the more clear-cut chances. Hlecky was possibly the busier of the two goalkeepers, albeit we probably had more possession in and around their box. But in the second half, we just stepped it up. We took control of the game, and it was just a matter of time when we'd score that that winner, and then potentially, as he's saying about pushing on to get another one, hitting the post after that. As Joe said about Sunderland, they just look like a team without anything up front at all. I've got a friend who's a couple of friends who are Sunderland fans, and they were there yesterday, and it messaged me at half time saying that, oh, you're a bit fortunate to be in drawing at half time, but then at full time they were full admittance that yeah, you deserve to win that in the end, because their manager, who they don't have an awful lot of time for already, was seemingly intent to play without strikers. The fans were singing for the striker, weren't they, at one point, Joe, just before the substitution was made. The Sunderland fans were chanting along the lines of "we want a striker" or some words to that effect. So I think they've pretty much had enough of playing this way with this Joe Bellingham phantom striker formation, which doesn't seem to be working particularly well at the moment.
The phantom menace. Here are the numbers, and they do read well for us, Joe. Look at that, 2.26 on the XG. Possession, Sunderland just edging that 51-49, 17 shots, 3 big chances to 1. Let's talk about individual players, Joe. Got to say, I think it's been a little bit over the top about Travis. I think there's a little bit of, he came in and he did a good job, therefore he is the second coming of Busquets or something. I thought he was perfectly fine and just kind of slotted in. And that's what we needed, isn't it? And that's what you get from a kind of season 200 games. Talk to me about Travis and talk to me about Jackson.
Yeah, I thought Travis, I thought he did really well, like I say, secure on the ball. But you knew, I mentioned it earlier in the pod, you knew you weren't going to be getting what Stan Morsey gives you, because he's not going to know all the patterns. He's not going to know this. And basically, he just needed to concentrate on being the shield, effectively. And he was a very good defensive shield for us, very secure on the ball and helped keep it moving. But he's just one of those players. And I think it raises the level of the Sam Morsey replacement from Don Ball and previously Lee Evans. I think it's just a player with 200 championship appearances sort of come in. And
you
it's
can
not
join
just
the
that,
dots, fill in the blanks, Joe, can't you?
Yeah, and I noticed sort of at the very start of the game, he goes over and shakes the ref's hand and has a chat with him. And within, honestly, there'd been 80 seconds in the game, so 1 minute 20 in the game. He'd been and chat to the ref 3 times about things there. So I think he's one of those sort of natural leaders that likes to get in there and gets in the ref's ear and does that side of the game as well, which is when you, even if you're not contributing as well on the pitch, if you're doing that, that's all helping as well. But I thought he was contributing as well. But yeah, no, he looks a step up in the sort of squad quality.
Do you want to talk about Caden Jackson, Craig?
Yeah, so just a quick one on Travis as well, is that you could see that he had that experience because he just landed on the ball. He was where the ball ended up being. He was getting his foot in here and there. He was just breaking up their play. He was nudging their players when they weren't on the ball as well, just to knock them off their stride and things like that. Just little things that you get from having a 200 championship game experience centre midfielder in your team. But yeah, moving on to Jackson, as I said at the beginning, he did absolutely everything that was expected of him and more with the goal, I would have thought. There's been chat today in the Telegram group about, you know, the work that Hurst does sprinting across the pitch 30 yards to close down one centre defender to sprint across the other side of the pitch to close the other one down. And that's what you'll get from Jackson as well. You know, you may not get the physicality and the relative duffing up of the centre backs that Hurst will do, but you will get the effort and the closing down. And if they can start just polishing, which they've done with a lot of the players that, you know, Jackson himself has improved under McKennan. If they can keep working on and keep improving him, then there's no reason why we can't get a rollout of him as well. Nathan Jones was talking about him actually in about how he'd come across him when he played for Accrington, when Jones was in charge of Luton, saying that back then in League Two, he looked a player and, you know, there were potentially people sniffing around him because he's got the physical attributes, that raw pace and he's a good size as well, etc. I say he did well yesterday. He ran the channels. He did his job. He scored his goal. And you'd imagine he's cemented his place for the foreseeable future.
I agree, Joe, with Craig's assessment on Jackson. And what did you say earlier, Craig, talking about ceilings? That's a good point. With Jackson, we know he's not Hurst. And I'm really pleased for him that he scored yesterday. If they can put him in this advantageous position, Joe, where he doesn't have to go over his ceiling and he can do his pressing, and if he gets a chance and he takes it, all the more, I think in the short term, it's going to be okay, isn't it?
Well, we've really only got one more game to get through, haven't we? And that's Leicester away, which is probably a game where nobody's expecting us to get anything from, isn't it? And whilst maybe Jackson's ceiling isn't as high as the Hurst in the squad, I actually think his floor is quite high, though.
That's like a good point.
You know what you're going to get from him, and it might be that it's a 6 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10 every week, but a manager can work with that. The problem is, if you play Freddie Ladapo, you might get an 8 out of 10 one week, but you could get a 2 out of 10 the following week and a 3 out of 10, and the 8 out of 10 becomes the outlier in that thing. And if it, like I say, in any management, if you know what you're going to get from somebody, it's so much easier. And like I say, we know what, and I think Jackson's spoken about this in the past with McKenna, saying, I've finally got a manager in who tells me what I can do and focuses on what I can do rather than what I can't do. And this is all part of sort of McKenna's genius, effectively, that he works at how to use players and uses them correctly to their within their limitations, but and showcases their strength rather than exposes their weaknesses.
100%. Tremendous win, tremendous performance, tremendous character. So many tremenduses. Here's a word from our tremendous sponsors, Innovation Labs.
Innovation Labs is business hub and co-working space with strategic locations across Suffolk. Our aim is to foster innovation, entrepreneurship, business growth, and the development of an AI centre of excellence in Suffolk. Monthly hot desks are available from just £79. For more info, head to innovationlabsgroup.com or contact info@innovationlabsgroup.com. Innovation Labs, providing support for businesses across Suffolk. Locations in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, Woodbridge, with more to follow.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kieran McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
ITFC Women, Joe, you were there today, went under 4-1 against Charlton in a game we were sponsoring.
Yes, it was an FA Cup fourth round tie, so it's big prize money in the Women's FA Cup this year. I think they've doubled from last year, but I think we're currently third in the effectively a regionalised version of the third tier, while Charlton are second in the Championship, so sort of on the brink of pushing for the Super League. And we started well. Sophie Pescett sort of intercepted one from the keeper, gave the ball to her, and she went back and put it past her. But from that point on, Charlton were pretty dominant and sort of managed to get a couple of goals just before half-time. And then right on the stroke of half-time, sort of a clumsy challenge gave them a penalty, and it basically killed the game off at 3-1. And then in the second half, they were able to just effectively keep us at arm's length and beat us. I thought the girls gave it a good go, but it was a real gap in quality. And I think that just the extra division above really showed, I think, just in the athleticism and the physicality of some of the Charlton girls. But it was a good attendance down there, 770 people down there. We, myself, Rich and Dave went on to present Sophie Pescett with a bottle of champagne for player of the match, I should say, there. And yeah, I think she deserved that. I thought Liam Mitchell at the back did well as well, but it was a shame that the game sort of just petered out a bit in the second half. But no, great atmosphere down there, and the girls did well.
Nice job. Just a bit of housekeeping as well. We're likely going to switch the shows around next weekend, because obviously we've got to wait till Monday night for our trip to Leicester that we'll get Craig and Joe's opinions on at the end of this show. So it will likely be the preview show on Sunday night, and we'll get, if Rich and Seb do that, we'll get them to talk about what's gone on in the Championship on Saturday, and then we'll do some kind of reaction. I might watch along, or I might go. So someone might watch along and I might go. We'll be across it in many, many different ways. Let's have a look through what went down in the Championship, and we'll have a look at the latest tables. Get primed with your questions for the end of this segment, and we can put them to Craig and Joe. On Friday, that bloody Jonathan Rowe again. He's very good at football. Hull 1, Norwich 2. Coventry 3, Leicester 1. Leicester, actually, the big losers at the top of the table. They're still miles clear. Birmingham 2, Swans 2 on Tony Mowbray's debut. Leeds cruised in. They're just integrating their England striker into their 15 to £30 million frontline players they've already got. 3-0 they won at Cardiff. Huddersfield 1, Plymouth 1. Millwall 1, Middlesbrough 3. They've had a lovely old week after beating Chelsea. Preston 2, Bristol City 0. Rotherham 0, Stoke 1. This is the one we're all looking at, though. Southampton 4, Sheffield Wednesday 0. Thanks, Wednesday, our League One brethren from last year, doing us no favours. And Southampton, as expected, did perform the overtake, but we did have the response. West Brom 4, Blackburn 1. All not well at Blackburn. If you saw our excellent show with Rich and Dave and Dan from Rovers Chat, you'll have got some good detail on that. But West Brom winning means that everybody in the top six, other than Leicester, all won this weekend. You can see our result there. And today, the goal machine that is Jake Livermore scored twice for Watford at QPR. Craig, who you want to talk about?
Well, I can talk about Leeds, can't we? As you say, about Bamford scoring. Jane scored and Rutter scored. I think Somerville set two of them up, didn't he? So, yeah, they're just carrying on nicely, aren't they? Southampton, just the four goals. Except, mind you, I don't think Sheffield Wednesday's defending helped us much. From the highlights I saw, there was about four or five Southampton attackers in the box and only a couple of Sheffield Wednesday defenders, one of which was Barry Bannon at least two or three times. So that was expected. But Joe can talk about Leicester, but there was a couple of bits and pieces happening in the Leicester game, wasn't there? The red card and the Maresca yellow card, which might help us come Monday.
We'll take any help we can get in that one, Joe, won't we?
Yeah, and I said less. I thought Coventry were very good value for the win as well. Though I sort of managed to watch most of that one in the early kickoff, and yeah, they'll be missing Fatawu, won't they? Who's been one of their best players out wide, and they've still got some problems up front with regards to injuries and players missing.
Joe, can I just interject really quickly? I thought Fatawu as well dealt with Leif Davis really well in the Portman Road game, so there is that side of it as well. Continue.
Yeah, no. So obviously, I think people are pretty confident that Leicester are going to win the league. But if we can get anything up there and close that gap slightly and keep ahead of Southampton, it'll be a real boon.
Right, get your questions in for the guys. Although, I still need to do the league table. Stick a Q in front of it and a question mark afterwards. And I'll be able to pick it out in the amazing chat. We can see so many of you watching and contributing right now. Please do hit the thumbs up button. Help us out massively. So, Leicester, just the 65 points from 27 games. They've really let themselves down with that defeat, haven't they? So we go to within 7 points of Leicester, but honestly, that's not where I'm looking, because 3 points ahead still of Southampton, although they are cranking out the goal difference as well, if that ever becomes an issue. 7 points ahead of Leeds with 19 games to go. It's just insane how well this team has done. West Brom just look a lock for the playoffs. And we were joking about this, weren't we, last week? I said, four teams will probably get 90 points and then both lose to Corberon and Robbins in the playoffs. Well, that is nicely set up on that league table right there, isn't it? Let's get into some questions. Craig, to Matt, how is Chaplin able to get in so much space despite the large body of work available to opposing teams?
Yeah, it's a very good point, actually, isn't it? But I suppose it's a bit different from a set play rather than open play. I think people have seemed to have twigged a little bit in regards to our open play, pull it back to Chaplin on the penalty spot tactic. He doesn't seem to be getting to those spaces quite so much. But I just think the set piece, as Joe eloquently put earlier about the role that Edmondson played in that goal, I think it's pretty plain for all to see. But you know, again, he's just stepping up. Another player, Chaplin, who's just stepping up. What's that? 9 goals this season so far into January, you know, on the back of what, 27, 28 league goals last year. And he was captain yesterday. I think he really, really enjoyed yesterday's match. You know, he just seemed to be playing with a bit of even extra fire in his belly, if there can be such a thing, from Chaplin. You'd say he really enjoyed it on the bench after the final whistle. He looked like he really enjoyed it as well, and he got man of the match, didn't he, from Sky. So, yeah, fair play to the guy.
They laid this out quite nicely on FootMob, Craig, where if you look across the top there, you can see Chaplin, top scorer with 9, Broadhead 8, Hurst 6. Leif Davis has 10 assists. He's a left-back. That's mental. Chaplin and Hurst then with 6 assists. And the combined, the goal contributions number, Chaplin way out in front, actually, with 15. Why isn't Leif Davis on that? Oh, he hasn't got any goals, has he? Hurst with 12 and Nathan Broadhead with 10. So kind of the same players contributing, but I think that underlines your point. Joe, Steve, it seems to me that we have to work hard to get narrow wins where Leeds, Southampton et al. Find it easy to win by a margin. As much as that's disappointing to hear, he's right, isn't he, Joe?
Yeah, he is. But Leeds have also found a way to drop silly points, really. If you think that we're 7 points ahead of them and they've taken 6 points of us, that means they've dropped 13 points more than we have in the games, not between Leeds and Ipswich. So that's a huge amount of points dropped. So yeah, you might win 4-0 one week, but it's better to win 2-1 and 2-1 than to win 4-0 and draw 1-1, isn't it? I know that's stating the obvious, but Leeds have been wildly inconsistent, haven't they? And that's the issue away from home, their form.
Yeah, well put. Yeah, we've only lost 3 games this season. So when you're talking about the consistency, and 2 of them were against Leeds as well. So against 23 teams before the Leicester game, we've lost 1 game to 23 teams, which says a lot, doesn't it? Sorry, I'll just go back to Joe on this one, Craig, and then we'll come to you on the next one. Do you know anything about El Mizouni and an offer this window?
I think there's been a few offers in for him. So I'd imagine the fact that news has been out on the Ipswich side of things is us looking to encourage any further suitors out and try and push the fee up a little bit. And it does seem likely that he'll be sold this window.
Okay. Jason makes a good point here, Craig. How do you guys feel Taylor did? A lot of wayward passes. Obviously, we try and both be positive and tell the truth here. He did give the ball away a few times. Craig, what I noticed when Morsi wasn't there is that we did see Taylor doing more bursts forward from midfield. We don't really see our midfield players do that a hell of a lot in terms of, you know, that driving run forward. The best example, this is really Championship, I can think, is Joe Rothwell. He used to do it for Blackburn, just burst from central midfield into the striking position.
And he's signing for Southampton tomorrow.
Oh, piss off. Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Sorry, I lost it there a bit, Craig. Talk about Taylor, because I think Jason makes a fair point, doesn't he?
No, Jason makes a very good point. He was slack with his possession and his passing a fair bit, certainly in the first half he was. But then he sort of grew into the game a little bit. He played a nice pass first half out to Burns. I think it may well have been the chance that Burns slung across the box for Jackson, if memory serves me right. That was Taylor's pass out to him. And then in the second half, there's a couple of times he dropped his shoulder and turned his man and sent him midfield. But I don't know. He just doesn't seem to quite be grasping that opportunity to cement a position just yet. But, you know, as you say, Ben, he is more of an old-fashioned number eight box-to-box midfielder, whereas our two centre midfielders don't tend to play that way. It's not what we want from him. We've got the three guys ahead of them to do that role. So, yeah, whether it's just him having to still get to terms with what we need or just need some more confidence in his ability to take the ball in those close areas in and around our box, it just doesn't seem to quite be clicking for him at the moment, unfortunately. But what we do know, he is a goal threat. He did get into the box yesterday for that shot, which he passed towards the goal rather than whacking it. So, you know, he does still tend to get into the box. But, yeah, just doesn't seem to be cementing that Luongo role, if you like, that Joe was saying, that he tends to play on the left there.
Totally agree. He'd be a perfect player if you're playing 4-3-3 and he was kind of the spare runner getting into the box. But we just
late runner.
Don't play that way. And you've just spent a minute praising Connor Chaplin. He ain't getting in the number 10 spot anytime soon, either, is he? Joe, I've been told, Mr. Peanut, a deal is... Oh, ITK, done for Ladapo, but will only be sanctioned when we sign a forward. Are we okay to let him go?
Yes. Simply, he's just not contributing at all at the moment, is he? He came in for that start against QPR, missed a couple of good chances, and then just was pretty poor, really, after that. And also, the Wimbledon game, he was poor. And then you look yesterday, we had Jackson starting up front ahead of him. And then when Jackson went off, Broadhead went up front instead of him. And then later on in the game, Broadhead went off, and then Harness went up front ahead of him. So there were three players used ahead of him in that number nine role yesterday. And we're looking to sign two strikers this month. So, yeah, he's done his. And like I say, he'll go with everyone's best wishes because he was a big part of our fantastic season last year. But the club has just moved on too quickly for his ability level. He's a top League One forward who could probably do a job at a bottom-end Championship club. But we have become a top Championship club sort of straight away, and we've left him behind, and there'll be others left behind, as you see with like Greg Lee and Kyle Edwards previously.
Not a question, but an interesting point. One defeat in 10 and 1.9 points per game is one of the best mid-season wobbles I've ever seen. That much is true, I will say. But we are in another horrible battle where 2 points per game is...
Southampton's wobble isn't quite 1.9 points a game, is it, unfortunately?
It's what you're up against. let me just take this one, Colin, because it says Ben at the end of it. Do you think Chaplin is a future captain full-time, Ben? He's certainly got all the attributes, hasn't he? If you see the Town in Five things in terms of the leadership role and being vocal around the team, obviously, while Sam Morsi's around, then, you know, there's Mr. Captain. But I remember when we spoke to Matt Holland sort of saying you get leadership all over the pitch, and it's not necessarily just the guy who's wearing the armband, is it? Joe, can you do a bit of admin for us? Ian asking, do we know which player has been deregistered so that Travis could play yesterday? Would that have had to have happened?
Yeah, and to be fair, it doesn't really matter at this stage because during January, you can just register and deregister players as you wish. So it could be that it's George Hurst or Lee Evans, one of the injured players. It only really matters come the end of the month when you put in your list, and that list is then valid until the end of the season. So if a player is deregistered at that point, they are out for good, where we could have deregistered George Hurst last week and we could re-register him today.
Okay. Joe, our admin guy on the podcast.
Secretary, isn't he?
He spends an hour a day on the EFL website just reading the T's and C's over there.
Pod secretary.
This is a good question from Jace, Craig. How do you think Kieran will manage, rotate Travis once Morsi and Luongo are back? This could be really good if you've got four players, as Joe said, your right side is central midfielders. Surely that gives him more carte blanche to take the weight off Morsi and Luongo a little bit and take them out of games if the situation arises.
Yeah, I think it's more likely to take the weight off Luongo than Morsi. I don't think Morsi's going to be going anywhere anytime soon or be.
That's why I checked myself at the end of the
That's what I thought. Yeah. I don't think we'll drag him to that. We said this on Telegram before. I'm not going to be the one that's telling Sam Morsi he's being rested for the next.
Great. Game. Just quickly, did you see Morsi when Pritchard came off and he was moaning, and you could see Morsi in the background just kind of menacingly looking over, having a good laugh at that.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy, isn't he?
Amused me a lot. Carry on.
But it'd be interesting to see, and again, it's something that's been we've chatted about in Telegram, is whether you see all three, the Travis, Morsi and Luongo, playing at any point in any game, whether from the start or potentially probably not from the start, but during games, just to manage games out. We don't know how long Luongo's out for yet until the scan's been done this week, but he was walking pretty easily to his seat behind the dugout before the match. He didn't seem to be in any discomfort. But we'll see how that. But what it does, it just takes the weight, I suppose, off of rushing him back to play because, as I say, we know Travis is already made there. Whether to Joe's point about it appearing that Travis is more of the right side, we don't know, I suppose, because he had to play the role yesterday because Morsi wasn't there. So it may be that he can fill in the left sided role when Morsi's back. And if you were a slightly more timid centre midfielder in a championship team, you probably wouldn't want to be coming up against a midfield with Morsi and Travis in it, I wouldn't suspect.
Skip intro, Joe. If Fridge keeps performing as he has been, could he keep Burgess out of the team? And I mean this as no criticism, but his head it, kick it work yesterday, his defending was really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, and yeah, there's every chance he could keep him out of the team. That's how Burgess found himself in the team. Edmondson missed some games. Burgess came in, got the shirt, and didn't look back really from that point on. And if we win the next five games, or four or five games when Burgess is away, assuming Australia get right through to the latter stage of the tournament, you're not going to be changing the winning team when he comes back. But I'm sure, as has happened sort of at the start of the season, even if Edmondson's got the shirt, Burgess will play a few games here and there as and when is needed, because, like I say, Edmondson played against Plymouth and against Hull when they had a sort of pacey attacker that McKenna wanted to match him up with. And I think that Burgess will play games. But no, this is what you want as a manager. You want all your players playing well, and you want to be having tough decisions to make over who is going to be in a team, rather than thinking, oh God, which one of these two am I going to have to play because they're both struggling.
And it wasn't as apparent, it wasn't as apparent that lack of balance we talk about, having a left footer on the left side of midfield, that wasn't as apparent yesterday to my very untrained eye, whereas it possibly has been before. So maybe they've been working on a bit of that in terms of Davies' positioning or the centre midfielder's positioning, knowing that Edmondson's right footed rather than left.
I'm not going to answer this question. Luke Chambers is going to answer this question, because if you came to our live show, you will know what the answer to this question is from a man who knows way more about it than most of us. Is part of Morsi's role to make sure Wolfie doesn't fall asleep on the ball? Yes. And finally, we'll go to Craig. I think Rob asked this earlier. Do we need another recognised fullback this window? JD out, Williams gone back, Clark managing Achilles, Leaf suffering a knock.
Yeah, you probably would have thought so. We don't know the story with Williams or what his situation is about coming back.
Kieran Ken obviously. Such a shame that, Craig. I was so excited about him.
Yeah, 100%. And because he plays both sides, doesn't he? equally well. He gives you, you know, back cover on both sides, as does Clark to a certain extent, but he just allows you, between three players, you've covered two positions, haven't you? Whereas now we're going to be down to, as was said there in the question, Davis, who we don't really want to be slogging if we don't have to, because we may have another George Hurst scenario. Clark, who's nursing his Achilles. Danasian, who's out for we don't know how long, because that was another thing that McKenna mentioned afterwards, was he's getting injections in his groin at the moment because that's not fully fit. So, albeit Humphreys does okay, he's not a fullback. You're in the realms of square pegs and round holes, aren't you, which you don't really want to be doing. So I wouldn't be surprised at all once we know the full story, or certainly the result of where Williams is going to be come January 31st, that we get another similar-ish, hopefully, type replacement in there to cover both sides.
We will do one more because I found it fun. It was about the lyrics of the song. There we go. From Gord Joe. What will the lyrics of the Super Kieran McKenna song change to without Ladapo? Or should it be retired if Ladapo leaves?
Well, it's almost like the Massimo song, isn't it? Where that is Chaplin in attack. So I'd imagine it will be
sing for us,
Wolfie at the back, Chaplin in attack. The sort of
sing
the,
it.
I can't. I've got a sore throat. The cadence. It's sort of Ladapo to Chaplin does work, doesn't it?
So it'll be Gallagher. You'll have to emphasize the middle syllable of Gallagher. Okay.
Sam G in attack.
Gallagher in attack.
Well, we're gonna stop this now before this goes any further, and we're gonna talk about our next game, which is in theory the most difficult game you can get because it's away at the league leaders. I'm a broken record. Leicester are not a normal relegated team. That squad should never have been relegated, especially when you consider it also had Tielemans, Madison, Barnes.
Yeah,
all of these players. So bit of a freak show of a squad, and their points total, I think, possibly suggests that. We did have it mentioned earlier in the chat that Enzo Maresca, he's banned from the touchline, is he?
Yeah,
that's the thing, you know, because going up against Kieran McKenna is not easy at the best of times. And okay, if you have a incredibly high quality squad, that helps. But I think that'll make a difference.
The bald fraud didn't fancy being up against McKenna.
You can't. It's unbelievable. He's got 65 points, Joe.
I know. People will still say about Pep, even though he's the sort of greatest manager of the last 30 years. But.
So let me just bring up what we're going to have to contend with next weekend, or delete Joe at the same time. My apologies, Joe, there. If you're on audio, I deleted Joe from the stream after his singing. So Southampton go to Swansea, which there'll be lots of Russ Martin narrative there.
Luke Williams narrative as well.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they've got to travel away from home. It's the 12:30 kickoff. What are Leeds doing? Why can I not see them on that screen? Maybe they play on Sunday. It's going to be spread across. Leeds are at home to Preston. I am going to give them 3 points for that one, Craig. Three, so
brave, yes.
We don't. I'm sticking my neck out there, aren't I? We don't much. Well, look, we've got to concentrate on us. But Craig, it's just a case of if you can get something, and then we've ticked off. We've played Leeds twice and we've played Leicester twice, yeah?
Yeah, exactly that. As Joe said earlier, no one's expecting us to get anything out of it. I said when I was on before about Morsy missing games, that he was always going to miss due to suspension. Well, I'd rather he missed Leicester, actually, because just to get it out the way, and he's back for the games that are, on paper, more winnable. It's quite interesting, actually. I was watching the Leicester game before leaving home on Saturday. I never realised Harry Winks had played 200 games for Spurs.
20 for England, yeah?
200 games for Spurs. It's ridiculous. I don't think, regardless of who's available or unavailable, indeed, he's obviously not going to be available either, but I think they'll probably cope, to be honest.
What's your take, Joe? I mean, we know how we're gonna play it, don't we? Because we always play the same way, which is a great thing. And I guess you just hope it's a nice open game. I think both teams to score is possibly that. I mean, people talking about S Housing and stuff. I suppose Leeds went there and won 1-0, didn't they, and closed it down in that sort of manner. What does an Ipswich win there look like, Joe? A nice 3-0 comfortable win?
it's going to be incredibly tough. But whilst it's the toughest game of the season for us, it's also the toughest game of the season for them, isn't it, at the moment?
That's true, yeah.
Us being second in the table. So it's not one that they're going to be taking lightly, looking at as an easy 3 points and just turning up. They're going to be seriously needing to be on their game if they want to beat us. And if they're on their game, then we're going to struggle to get anything out of it. But if we're on our game and they're slightly off it, then we've got a chance. But like I say, they've got serious quality in their squad. They've got much better players than we have, but they're only 7 points ahead of us at this stage of the season. So we just got to keep doing what we're doing.
And the pressure's on them, isn't it, rather than us?
A big crowd there. I think we sold all our allocation now, sort of 3,500 tickets. So there'll be good noise from the Ipswich fans on a Monday night.
Craig, do you really think the pressure's on them?
Yeah, I think so.
They're 7 points clear. They've got better players. Well, we have to wait until Monday. We might have been overtaken by Southampton again. I think you can flip that round. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just debating it.
No, I think the pressure's on them. I think by virtue of the expectation being on them, and if we assume that Southampton would have won on Saturday lunchtime, they'll also be within 7 points. And then should we happen to beat them, then it's 4 points away, isn't it? And the gap's going to be closing 2 weeks on the trot.
What do you think the team will look like? You would hope that the back four goalie are the same. We know Morsi's not going to be there. Perhaps Luongo could return. And the only other thing is there a new striker, and would you debut him away at Leicester from the beginning? So it might just be exactly the same team, mightn't it?
Yeah, I think it'll be exactly the same team. I think if Luongo's going for a scan this week, it doesn't sound like he's going to be ready to do much training this week, let alone start against the league leaders on Monday. And I think, as Joe was saying earlier about Jackson and the role that he provides, certainly in terms of pressing, he may well have started in any case, had he not started yesterday and scored. You know, he may well have started in the away game at Leicester in any case by virtue of the characteristics that he's got. So I don't see many, if any, changes at all to the starting 11.
Do you disagree with that, Joe?
Yeah, and like I said, we're talking about strikers, aren't we? And the name that's sort of most heavily linked with us at the moment is Sam Gallagher. He's not played a lot for Blackburn. I don't think he's played since September, apart. We had half an hour yesterday. So if he is one that we do manage to get over the line, I know he's one we're pushing for and one that we definitely like and definitely want. If we can get him in, you'd imagine he's going to be a player that maybe is going to take a couple of weeks to get up to speed, and he'll be the finisher of the game. You let Caden Jackson go and run himself out for 70 minutes and chuck him on for the last 20 to see if he can get anything done on his debut, if we are able to get him over the line. And I think whoever, if we do have any new signings as a striker by next week, that game plan will probably be the same.
And let's just wrap this up, Joe, just to completely reiterate, because sometimes you can kind of get lost in the minutiae of everything and not zoom out and see the big picture. By the time we get to next weekend, it's going to be, I don't know, January the 20th or something. We've just been promoted from League One. Not only are they Year One parachute teams at the top of the table, but they're outlier Year One parachute teams who have not been circling the drain or yo-yoing. They've been in the Premier League, Southampton, Leicester, for years, and Leeds had 3 years up as well. We've got well over 2 points per game, and we're in an automatic promotion race. Let's just mark this right now on January the 14th, Joe. Absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, and at the very worst, at the end of the January transfer window, we're going to be, at the very worst, level in second place, level on points for second place, or clear in second place. That's the lowest we can be at that stage. So we've really got a good period now, sort of 3 or 4 weeks, to really get the squad built up again, to ready to give it the good go for the running. And if you look what happened last season, I know not every season will be the same, but last season we had this sort of mini wobble over the sort of Christmas, January period. We brought in some sort of refreshments to the squad, and then we just went on a mad run from that point. We know we can do that. The players know that they've got the muscle memory to do that. So do we just try and get into that mode again, into that flow state again, where we just go and go and go from this point onwards?
And Craig, what about this for a framing? As Joe points out, to the end of the transfer window, 18 games, you score one more point than Southampton, you're in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got Southampton to play, and Southampton have got to play.
They've got all the top five. Make that point, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that, exactly that. And as we've said it before, haven't we, that we had our relatively on paper more difficult fixtures over the Christmas period, and it transpired that we didn't pick up as many points as we had been. Southampton are going to have their tricky on paper fixtures coming up between now and the end of the season, and we're going to have a relatively
Southampton and West Brom at Portman Road.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. So now a lot of it is still in our hands, and hopefully, as Joe said, if we can get past January, get a couple, two or three new additions in, and then look at a more favourable list of fixtures in February, get a bit of momentum, and you know, who knows where it takes us.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm getting amped up now. What a positive way to finish. We must say thank you to Steve at the end of the show there, £2 on the Super Chat. So, guys, remember, we'll try and come up with some content during midweek, but this slot next week will be a preview show for the Leicester game, and we'll have a look back at what's gone on in the Championship. Hopefully, we will be celebrating Luke Williams and Swansea City. That would be very, very lovely, but we'll see what goes down. And yeah, Preston will have played at Leeds by that point, won't they? Look, we can only do what we can do. And then we'll review the Leicester game, probably either in the immediate aftermath or the following day, and do a full show. We'll figure it out next week. Guys, numbers off the scale. I can see them as they're coming. The chat's been flowing. Thank you so, so much. And we thank the brilliant club and the brilliant players that have given us such brilliant action to talk about. Last word from you, Joe.
Yeah, just can't wait for next Monday now. Hopefully I'll see some of these guys in the chat at the game next week and have a catch-up. But no, just buzzing for what a team we've got here, and it's going to be such a fun few months now.
Last word from you, Craig.
Yeah, just enjoy the week. We've got a full week off, haven't we? So to fully envelop yourself and get absorbed in all the transfer shenanigans and rumours, and if you want to tweet Rich with any unsubstantiated rumours that you've got, he's more than likely to accept.
He prefers if you tweet and DM him at the same time in triplicate. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He just needs to know.
He'd like to recommend that.
He's finger fully on the pulse.
gmail.com.
What a tremendous note to finish on. And Craig's use of envelop was fantastic at the end. So envelop this into your podcast machine. See you next week.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.